You're listening to The Takeaway.
Good morning, everyone. Well, much of the economy is knee-deep in a recession, but if you play the zero-sum game of economics, big losers mean there are big winners somewhere, and the biggest winner, at least this week, is likely to be Goldman Sachs. It's experiencing a boom. That's an understatement. Just last year, Goldman took $2 billion in government bailout money. It just paid the government back and is expected to report profits of upwards of $2 billion. Continuing now with Graham Boley, New York Times reporter, who was talking a little bit about the numbers that we're going to get later on this morning. And also, we add to the conversation Matt Taibbi, contributing editor at Rolling Stone. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning.
I guess the good news is, aside from what we're going to talk about Goldman, your dad, Mike Taibbi, who I used to work with at NBC, actually knows where you are because you're on the program live this morning.
I guess that's good.
That's too. Good. That's good for your dad. So, Matt, I take it you want to rein a little bit on this Goldman parade, even though the market seemed to be thinking Goldman's success is a success for investors.
Well, I mean, I just don't know how hard it is to make money when you have a more or less explicit guarantee from the government that the bank is not going to fail under any circumstances. I mean, I think, Graham, how much did the Goldman share price rise this year? What, 69% or something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of that has to do with the fact that in the wake of what happened last year, the entire Wall Street knows that, you know, this bank is never going to go under because the government just isn't going to allow it. In the wake of the AIG bailout and all the subsequent events.
Well, let's take apart the AIG events and how they rippled through the financial economy in just a moment. But first of all, I just want to note something because it's sort of puzzling me. Graham, was Goldman Sachs forced to take the money from the TARP? Did it need the money from the TARP? And it seemed to me it was a reluctant participant in this whole bank holding company ordeal. Graham?
Well, you're right. It didn't have to take the money. It argues now very clearly that it didn't want the money, and it was very quick to pay it back. But at the time, the world was falling apart, and it would probably have been very unwise not to have taken the money. And it did. And the conversion from an investment bank to a commercial bank structure, a reluctant again. But at the time, it was... It needed to change perception. It was right. It along with many other institutions were falling apart.
Well, Matt,
I'm not sure exactly how reluctant they were to convert to a bank holding company. Not only did converting to a bank holding company make them eligible for about $28 billion in FDIC backing for new bonds to be issued under the Temporary Liquidity Guarantee Program, but it also made the New York Federal Reserve their primary supervisor, and the Fed was run by a former executive of Goldman Sachs.
Let's talk specifically, Matt, about what that means for the business model of Goldman Sachs. So suddenly they're a bank holding company. Their deposits are... guaranteed by the FDIC, therefore their investments are guaranteed by the FDIC, and they're eligible to go to the discount window, which means they can get money at what interest rate and then lend it out at what interest rate?
Yeah, I don't know. They're eligible for to get money at a much lower interest rate than they were getting before. I mean, as an investment bank, I mean the conversion to a bank holding company was an enormous boon for the company, and it's important to point out that. Although they said that they didn't need to take the TARP money, that they were reluctant to get it, there's no evidence that that's actually true. They also said that they wouldn't have been at risk at all if AIG had gone under, and there are a lot of people on Wall Street who believe that Goldman might actually have gone out of business if they hadn't gotten money from the government through the AIG bailout.
Okay, let's talk about that specifically then. Matt Taibbi, contributing editor at Rolling Stone, Graham Boley, a New York Times reporter here in the studio. Matt, AIG's failing would have taken a lot of banks down besides Goldman Sachs. How is Goldman Sachs different here?
Well, first of all, they were the single largest creditor to AIG. AIG owed them about $20 billion. And I don't think any other bank had its CEO in the room when the AIG bailout was being structured. Lloyd Blankfein was actually there when the AIG deal was being concluded. Of course, Hank Paulson was who greenlighted the deal as Bush's Treasury Secretary, was a former head of Goldman Sachs. So it's pretty obvious, especially in light of the fact that at least $13 billion of the dollars that went to AIG went directly to Goldman Sachs. That this was the AIG bailout was a tremendous sweetheart deal for Goldman Sachs, especially in light of the fact that that same week the government decided to let Goldman's single biggest competitor, Lehman Brothers, fail while it rescued AIG.
Graham, let me turn to a question of the public interest. In the story that you wrote, among other places, there's a question of how Goldman did so well. And you talk about reaping a fortune trading bonds. Bonds are often government-backed, and a lot of states in turmoil have relatively high-yield bonds these days. What do you mean by this reaping a fortune trading bonds, and how does that relate not only to the states but also to things like pension funds and 401ks?
It had this business model which was very successful before the crisis, where it's a big trading house. And now in this new world, a lot of its competitors have gone out of business, the markets are sort of disjointed. And that business model applies really well in this new trading world. So it's come into its own, really. And it's trading bonds. And we're going to see in these results, this area of its business is where it's going to make sort of record blowout revenues and profits.
Now, Matt Taibbi, you write in The Great American Bubble Machine, which is your article in Rolling Stone about Goldman Sachs. And I'm wondering if bubble is the apt metaphor here. If Goldman is sort of the most powerful trading company around, it's not so much taking advantage of bubbles as it is basically wandering around finding bargains everywhere it looks with no real competition, right?
Yeah. What's going on right now? I don't think anybody's arguing that what's happening is a bubble. Although there's been a lot of speculation about the program trading that that Goldman's been involved with, but. Right now, no, of course not. Goldman, especially in the wake of last year when Lehman Brothers and Bear left the scene, it's the baddest guy left in the block. And it has, a powerful ally in the government, and everybody on Wall Street knows it. And that makes it, virtually a fearsome competitor for anybody to deal with. And that's obviously one of the reasons for its success. I mean, I don't think you can argue that they're not doing well because of their own merits at this point, but they're there because of a lot of events that happened last year.
I guess what's puzzling me is the bank, the Citigroup, the federal government seems to be obsessed with saving Citigroup as well as, you say, making Goldman Sachs a success. What is the different mission in helping Goldman Sachs versus helping Citigroup?
There are two completely different circumstances. I mean, I think they've helped both banks clearly, but they've helped them far more than they've helped small regional banks. And I think a lot of people have argued that while Citigroup and Goldman and the other big banks on Wall Street immediately got access to billions of dollars in TARP money, the smaller regional banks, who incidentally contributed far less to the financial crisis, were still waiting for public assistance months later. In fact, I talked to some people from regional banks who didn't even get an answer for their TARP money requests, four months after the program started. So I think it's not so much Goldman as opposed to the rest of the big banks on Wall Street, but the big banks as opposed to the smaller banks.
What do we have to look forward to, Matt? You have some snarky lines in there about Robert Rubin, who you say might have been born in a $4,000 suit. You kind of run through people in leadership. What should folks much closer to the ground expect from Goldman and also from the financial recovery?
Well, I mean, I think we're gonna see more of the same. I mean, I think this whole situation was kind of foretold last year when the financial crisis started and the government massively intervened to rescue Wall Street, and we're gonna see that these big banks are now gonna start profiting as they were before. But there have already been complaints that they haven't repaid the government isn't making enough of an investment on its TARP money, that the banks are underpaying the government for the warrants that the government bought in the bank's common stock. And I think we're going to see more news like this, that the banks are making an enormous amount of money while the rest of us kind of haven't felt the recovery.
So the feds aren't getting a piece of this Goldman profit, in your view. And Graham Bolle, do you think that there's any difference between Goldman Sachs success and, say, an Exxon success that benefits from the price of oil spiking for reasons that basically are just good timing?
I just like to make the point that...
Very quickly.
Yeah, Matt raises a big question. We're in this new era where Goldman is taking lots of risks, and we have to ask the question whether they're repeating the same problems of the last era.
All right, Matt Taibbi, contributing editor at Rolling Stone, author of The Great Bubble Machine about Goldman Sachs, and Graham Bowley, New York Times reporter here in the studio. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Goldman Sachs numbers out later today.